Hello and welcome to the PC Gamer Podcast. This is episode 112 for Thursday, December 13th, 2007.
AD.
Shut up! I'm your host today, Chuck Osborne, Senior Executive Editor for PC Gamer, and I apologize profusely for not being Dan Morris this week. I am joined today by Senior Editor Logan Decker.
Howdy.
Senior Associate Editor Dan Stapleton.
Ahoy.
Our Senior Executive Intern Norman Chan.
Ahoy, ahoy.
Senior XEIC Gary Witta.
Hello there.
And as always, our Senior Producer Jeremy Williams out in Chicago.
Hey guys.
Where it must be very cold.
It's a bit chilly here. You and Logan sound particularly good today.
We have new headsets, which it's been a long time in coming.
They're fantastic.
Well done.
Courtesy of Steel Sound, and thank you to them for facilitating our podcasting.
Thank you very much,
Steel
Sound.
We can't all be senior, can we? If everyone's senior, then no one's really senior.
That implies there's somebody
that was sort of the gag as thank you for taking away the
curtain. But we can all be.
Yeah, okay, everyone who's not senior is not on the podcast.
Things? They're really comfortable. They feel like they're caressing and kissing my ears. SteelSeries 5HV2. Who made the sound? Cut the mic on that person. Pro gaming headset. USB 7.1. Very nice. Retractable microphone. Ooh.
Plug.
Hell yeah.
No, they actually are very nice, and they're comfortable too. So,
yeah, I've actually been using them for like a year, and like we had a bunch of headsets that have been breaking right and left on us. So eventually, we just said, okay, we're gonna get some standardized ones. So,
SteelSeries are the only ones that have lasted more than a year.
What? I'm using some Plantronics, and they're fine.
Yeah, but
oh yeah, let's settle for fine.
Like we've had a bunch of Plantronics, and they keep breaking on us. That's
how's your wife? She's fine.
So today I have a very special announcement. PC Gamer is getting in on the whole reality TV show thing, except without the TV part of it. Have you ever wondered how you could write for the world's best-selling PC Games magazine? Mm. Well, here's your chance. I am looking for America's next top PC Gamer reviewer. Now, this is how it's going to work. North American residents only. Please send to me a 150-word review of Peggle to chuck@pcgamer.com with the words next top reviewer in the subject line. Now, that's very important because if you fail to follow directions, you will be immediately disqualified. Now, I'm announcing this today, Thursday, December 13th, 2007 AD. it's going to be announced in our coming magazine, February 2008 issue, but everybody who listens to the podcast is going to have a couple of weeks head start on this to get into me. The deadline for submissions is going to be February 10th, 2008. So the best writers are going to be invited to impress me even further until I whittle the group down to one. And that person is going to be asked to review a game for a spectacularly small amount of money. and hopefully, you know, you will be able to become one of our new freelancers. And you know, the deal is basically, I'm not trying to trivialize the whole process of writing for our magazine. What I am trying to do, though, is encourage people who wouldn't normally, you know, think about actually sending in an application to say, you know what, I'm going to give this a chance. And it, you know, you may be brilliant. You may actually be a fantastic writer. And if you are, we would love to have you on board. So, you know, please give this some serious thought. We'll be talking about this more in future podcasts and also on our blog post at www.pcgamer.com.
150 words, huh?
150 words. And the reason I chose Peggle is because, you know, anybody can play Peggle. It's a very easy game to play, but it's a difficult game to actually describe and talk about, especially in 150 words. So you really do have to have some talent in order to tackle it.
150 words is really not many words at all. If people aren't used to writing, we'll probably find that when they start writing their review, check your word counting. Those 150 words, you're going to run out real quick.
Yeah, yeah, they
so
go by.
Be very concise.
Mm-hmm.
You should use really long words. That's my trick.
And no wonder you're not America's next top PC Gamer reviewer.
I'm one of the past top reviewers.
It's actually the exact opposite of when I used to be a freelancer and I'd be paid by the word, and so you'd do everything you possibly could to increase your word count. Like, there was no such thing as a contraction. Like, you never used the word doesn't or isn't. It was always does not, is not, because you double your money.
Yeah, it cost you like 5 cents, right?
Yeah.
So, Jeremy, I think there was an announcement you wanted to make.
Yeah, I just wanted to give a quick shout-out to Blaze on our Steam group, who's been organizing our PC Gamer games in TF2 for the past couple weeks. I've been neglecting to say thanks, but thanks from all of us from the podcast for doing that. We don't have enough time on our hands to organize the games ourselves, so he was actually organizing games within a subgroup called the PC Gamer Fans or something like that, and we invited him into the PC Gamer group so that he could just do that for all of our listeners and readers. So go ahead and join the games. There's two a week, I think, and if you see Blaze online, say thanks.
Also, thank you very much, Blaze.
Thanks, Blaze.
Thank you, Mr.
One day we'll play too.
Yeah, somebody brought this up earlier this week about, you know, the PC Gamer night was starting and why weren't we in there? And at the time, we were still at work. all the guys on the East Coast, they were already playing and we were still here in the office.
And another issue was that, you know, last month in particular, there were a lot of new games coming out. We just didn't have time to devote to TF2. Now that things are petering out again, and especially over vacation, you might see us in there more, but I guess right now, not really, because we've got like a week and a half of vacation taken out of our production cycle, so we're kind of going like crazy already, but yeah, we'll be in there when we can.
So I guess we'll get straight to the news. First off, there's an interesting wrinkle in the whole Perpetual and Gods of Heroes cancellation. It looks like the PR firm Konki has actually filed a suit against Perpetual because they canceled it, and not just that they canceled it, but that they had no intention of ever really bringing it out. And in the complaint, there was a couple of very disturbing quotations. One of which was that, Perpetual was going to put all of their concentration on Star Trek Online, and Konki believed that was going to adversely affect Gods and Heroes and not allow for the game to come out. But also, Konki was saying that they believe that as part of their public relations campaign, they were successful in convincing reviewers to write positive reviews about Gods and Heroes.
I have to believe that's not what they meant to say. Like when I read that, it's like I figured maybe some like legal counsel wrote that, not really understanding. Maybe he misunderstood the difference between reviews and previews.
Did we say that out loud?
What? Yeah.
How much were they claiming from Perpetual for a guarantee of good reviews? How much is a good review worth to them?
I don't think that's what they meant. I hope that's
not
what they meant.
Well, I figure true. If they procured good coverage and they considered that to be under, you know, their work, you know, their
right. But
presentation, that kind of thing.
But the word they used was review and not preview.
Yeah. Oh.
That's what the mistake was.
And I think among anybody of us on staff, I've probably seen that game the most number of times because I've gone to all the hands-ons and all that stuff. And anytime it's been showing, I've seen it. I don't know exactly what it is that they were supposed to have done to me in order to, you know, ensure that it gets a good review. But as far as I know, I have not been hypnotized or anything like that. Yeah. So I don't know what it is that, you know, they were going for there.
The question is, when we go to these game events now, do we have to bring along those drink coasters that double as date rape drug testers? Is that...
The last thing I remember is that umbrella with a spiral on it. Whoa, 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 whoa.
God of Gods and Heroes.
I don't think that's what they meant to say. I think that's...
I certainly hope that's not the case. But you know, just based on that, if that's what it says in the complaint, then I certainly hope the judge throws that part out.
Yeah. What they are suing about is that they fulfilled their end of the contract, and Perpetual, through some various kind of financial weaseling, according to the complaint...
Alleged financial weaseling.
Yeah. Alleged financial weaseling. The alleged weaseling was they are now saying because Perpetual itself has gone bankrupt, But in order to continue working on Star Trek Online, what they've done is they created a new thinly veiled corporation owned by the same people and transferred the rights over there. And they sold the rights between companies at a loss. So, you know, it's all kind of shady if it went down like they said it did.
And isn't the new company also Perpetual? It's like Perpetual LLC or something.
Yeah, it's like P2. So it's listed as in the complaint. So it's all very legally questionable. I guess there's a section in the complaint that you know details the law they're you know complaining under. And if what they say happened actually happened, it's kind of textbook. It's like no, you can't do that. But which also kind of throws into doubt whether Star Trek Online will, you know, its future. Because I guess Conky is suing for between $80,000 and $280,000 plus punitive damage.
Holy moly.
Yeah.
So that
well $280,000 in the suit it's their maximum bonus depending on how many players Gods and Heroes would have had upon release. Which I don't know how, you know, what their expectations were, but that's a fair chunk of money.
But had the game come out as you know, they were led to believe it would, and Perpetual may or may not have intended to actually put out, then they would have gotten that amount of money. And by through these alleged shenanigans, they have screwed Conky out of their share of the money.
And after Conky went to all the trouble of guaranteeing that I was going to give them a good speech, too. Just... So it looks like there is a weighted companion cube that's being auctioned off for charity right now. And it's on eBay, and we will have a link to where it is right now. It looks like the current bid is up to $224.70.
How big is this thing?
It looks pretty big.
I think it's life size. It looks larger than life size.
Either that or the woman in this picture is incredibly small.
it's pretty big. It looks like maybe 3 feet across.
Wow.
On each side. It's a plush companion cube, and it's not an official one. I know Valve is going to release some official, they have a smaller version that they're going to try. I don't know when they're going to release it, but hopefully sometime soon. And they have these car plushies that you put in, like the dice for cars. But this one's a custom-made one that I think is the third in a series. And I don't know how much the other one sold for.
Is that Meg Ryan?
No.
All right, just checking.
But anyway, it's being auctioned to raise money for Child's Play, which is that's Penny Arcade's charity, I believe, right?
Yeah.
Yep, it is. Yeah, and they recently raised like what was it, $250,000 at their annual charity dinner event, which is great for them. Oh, check this out. On the eBay page for this weighted companion cube, shipping and handling is $100. Yeah. How's that for a scam?
Wow.
Well, it is large.
It is weighted.
It's not very heavy because it's a plushie.
It's a plushie. Does the girl deliver to you?
Oh, did you really have to
Norm,
ask that?
You know, Norm just brought the discourse down.
Yeah.
Again?
That was an allusion to the, you know, the other auction.
Always the lowest common denominator.
Hmm.
Norm.
Does anyone else want to address that, or can we just move on?
No. Well,
let's put Norm in the corner and move on.
Speaking of charity, it looks like one place that will be needing your charity is CompUSA, because they are unfortunately going to be shutting down this January after the Christmas holiday season. So sad farewell to one of the many retail stores that has been carrying PC goods and PC games for many a year.
And a former employer of Greg Biederman.
Yeah, that's true.
Although I don't think he liked it very much there. I mean, he used to have some stories about not enjoying his time there. But did you guys ever buy anything from CompUSA?
I was in the market bin every weekend.
Yeah, I used to go there all the time myself. You know, the problem is that they just couldn't really compete with Best Buy or Circuit City as far as prices went.
Yeah, there was one at, I guess, near a movie theater, and I think it was in Santa Clara. I never really bought anything from there, I don't think.
I imagine online has taken a bite, too. I, for one, used to shop
around
for
sure.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Now I buy all my stuff from Newegg, so.
And, yeah, and you know, bought... you go to Best Buy to get electronic or computer stuff, but I think few people would think to go to CompUSA to get an HD TV, you know, a lot fewer.
Right. And yeah, I've always done my physical shopping mostly at Fry's, which, you know, it's been a California store for, you know, for
awesome.
20, like 15
years.
It's
like a carnival of fun.
When I moved here from Texas and everybody would talk about Fry's, I had no idea what you people were talking about. I was like, well, you mean the stuff that comes with hamburgers? And then I went there and it was like, oh my God, this is the most amazing store ever.
it's a Costco, but just computers.
Yeah, Costco for geeks.
Well, yeah, except they expanded into appliances and everything. So it's kind of almost a warehouse store, but not warehouse quantities. But and you know, their prices vary from, you know, really good to pretty bad, and their customer service the worst. But
at Fry's,
you know, if you know what you're looking for, I recommend it. If you don't, do not ask them.
Yeah, everyone says the people walking the aisles, the customers, are the people you should ask for advice at Fry's.
Well, it's you know, I've always had the same experience at Circuit City too. I mean, do you remember when they used to have it at Circuit City where you actually had to hunt down a salesperson in order to check out? Like, they didn't have registers set up anymore?
Yeah, it was this showroom model, right?
Yeah, so you had to go find somebody to check you out, and they would say, "Oh no, I'm not doing it right now. Go ask him."
Now, Circuit City
it is kind of a bummer though, because even though companies like Best Buy and Circuit City have kind of wiped them out a little bit, you know, if you want like fairly geeky things, like right now I'm on the lookout for a new internal DVD-ROM drive, and you know, you go to Best Buy and they might possibly have one on the shelf. You know, you need to go to like a CompUSA or a Fry's, you know, for a large selection of fairly, you know, slightly more geeky computer things. But I have a little preview. I had a little preview about a year or so ago of what this shutdown is going to be like, because one of the CompUSAs here in San Francisco closed down a little while ago. It was one kind of down towards the south end of the city, and they had just an insane fire sale where they were selling literally everything in the store, including fixtures and fittings and carpets and whiteboards and all the things that they used to actually operate the store, and of course, you know, all their stock. And it started off, I believe, if you go to CompUSA this weekend, it's already like 20% off. They're gonna start selling the stuff off, and then it becomes kind of like a little bit of brinksmanship, like how you know, who's gonna blink first? Because every week as they get closer to finally closing the store, they get more and more desperate, and they take more and more stuff off the price. And I remember at my CompUSA that was closing down, in the last few days, stuff was like 75% off. But by that point, almost everything had been cleared out.
Yeah, well, you could get
like a 65-inch 1080p HD TV for like $500.
Wow.
So, I mean, it's really sad that CompUSA is closing down. I think they'll be missed. You know, I'm going to have to go all the way to drive all the way down to my local Fry's, which isn't really that local, if I really want to do kind of geeky computer shopping from now on. But if you are on the ball and you like to look for a bargain, you should definitely be hanging around like a vulture at your local CompUSA.
Yeah, circle
you might,
that course,
you might find
people.
Some really good bargains.
Just don't buy the extended warranty. Not a good idea. So, in other news, or non-news, Half-Life 3 was apparently reported by a website.
Yeah, according to a post on Dig, there was a submission to Dig where some website claimed to, you know, Half-Life 3 announced, not Episode 3, Half-Life 3, and it's total crap. Because what they're basing it on is an interview with the PR guy from Valve saying that Half-Life will not end with Episode 3. So, you know, they're saying that they're planning to continue it in some way. They did not specify in any way, shape, or form. There could be an episode 4. There could be, you know, maybe
Half-Life Adventures.
Yeah, it could
Half-Life Christmas Special.
It could be Half-Life themed Peggle. So there is absolutely nothing.
Well, except that's already been done.
Yeah, it could be more of that. That's true. Could be extra. It could be a bonus pack. So you know, it's just a shameless grab at getting Doug, and it worked for them. To be fair, it you know they got so much traffic it shut them down. You know they exceeded their CPU quota on their host. So the only way we were able to figure out that this story was even bunk was by looking at the Google cache. So don't get excited, anybody, because there is nothing out there on Half-Life 3.
So moving right along, Nielsen, the TV ratings people, have announced their own ratings for PC games played from April through November 2007. Most of it is probably what you would expect. Number one is World of Warcraft. Number two is The Sims. Number three, though, is RuneScape, which is a free MMO out there. Now, then it gets a little dicey to me as a PC gamer, because number four
RuneScape
is,
wasn't dicey.
Well, but at least that's primarily a PC title. Number four is shared between Halo 1 and 2.
Yeah, you know what the problem with Nielsen is?
Yeah.
That like, and this really bugs me that they're used for television ratings too, because all they do is they pick out a few families at random, and they you know put a box in their home, and this is for TV. They put a box in your home and track what you watch.
Well, it's a sampling though. I mean that is a
right,
respected
but,
you know rating practice.
Right,
well,
but
they asked Jacob and Sandra Nielsen. So little kiddies, what are you playing this week?
Yeah,
we're playing RuneScape.
Yeah, it's like, you know, some of these kids might enjoy, you know, some of these games, but I who even knows what their PC specs are? They might not have a high end PC. You know, they might just be playing on a you know Pentium 2. Who knows? So it's really weird that I hope nobody's really taking these numbers as you know as gospel.
But it is odd. I mean, Halo is somebody really. I mean, The Sims I can understand. You know.
Yeah.
But Halo. All right.
And I know a lot of people are playing RuneScape. I don't know if it's quite in the numbers that Nielsen is reporting, but a lot of people are playing that. But I just refuse to believe that Halo and Halo 2 on PC are being played more than Counter-Strike.
Yeah. More than Counter-Strike. More than Unreal. Any version. More than there's so many games out there. More than Team Fortress 2, even. That's preposterous.
Well, speaking of shooters, a new one has been announced: Command and Conquer Tiberium, which I guess is returning CNC to the Renegade route of you know they're trying to do another CNC based shooter.
How was Renegade received?
I liked it. I liked it a lot. It was really.
Yeah, it was deeply flawed, but you know, a good idea.
I don't think it sold very well at all, though.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that's why there was no sequel.
But it was, you know, primarily a single-player game, and you played from first-person or third-person perspective, but on the ground level in like a CNC battle zone. So you'd see, you know, the Hand of Nod, and you can go inside the building, set demo charges, fight the infantry, fight, you know, get into a tank, and play out. The CNC universe from a first-person perspective.
Right,
but this is not like
games?
That.
Well, it's going to be set 11 years after the Third Tiberium War. It's going to be squad-paced. Squads are going to be called
squad
raids.
Squad-based, not squad-paced.
Squad-based.
Squad-based.
Yeah. Squads are called raids, rapid assault, and intercept deployment. Known squad types are going to be infantry, missile infantry, Titan, and Orca. The missions are going to be centered around the Mediterranean Red Zone. And you will have some special powers, apparently.
I love how the backronym, like squad, like the raid squad. What's the raid thing stand for again?
Rapid assault and intercept deployment.
Right. I'm sure they thought of that, and then hey, that happens to spell raid.
and you're going to play as Ricardo Vega, a GDI field commander dragged out of retirement to stop the latest Nod master plan. Bum bum bum.
Nod. Has, yeah, you know, they produce a lot of those master plans.
So I wonder if Kane's going to be back for this one.
Well, probably. I mean, considering he seems to be immortal, but literally, and in the fiction, he's immortal. You can't kill him. He was around in Red Alert, and you know, whispering in Stalin's ear, So he looked the same age. So they haven't explained it, but somehow he's immortal.
He just had some work done.
A nice coincidence that Joe Duncan is, or whatever his guy's, the actor.
Joe
Coogan is also immortal.
Yeah, he really does not age. He looks the same.
Yeah. Creepily so.
I personally have no problems at all with the concept of a first-person shooter in the CNC universe. Why wouldn't we all want to see that? Renegade wasn't that great, not by long chalk, but you know, we are kind of in the middle of a first-person shooter renaissance right now, where you know just all the FPS games seem to be really good. So it's a good time for that universe to get in on the action, I think.
Right. Well, and it's going to be EA's, and they haven't announced the, I don't think they've announced an engine yet. So it would be cool if it was a Crysis engine. I would love it.
Well, yeah, cool that for people with PCs potential. From the future.
Well, it's going to be released in the future.
Yeah, it's going to come out.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, like at least a year from now. So
yeah, maybe if I start saving up now, maybe I can SLI 3 GT8800 Ultras and get 35 frames a second.
I think that was the benchmark you're referring to was 3 GTs, wasn't it?
No, it was Ultras.
No, it was 3 Ultras.
Really? Yeah. The picture I saw
$1,800 worth of video cards.
The picture I saw had some skinny cards in there, I thought.
Nope. They were Ultras.
You're incorrect. So the story that we're referring to right now is a German website has released the first benchmarks for TriSLI, which I think NVIDIA just announced. I'm not sure if they broke NDA on that. But it exists through-way SLI only for the high-end cards, and they benchmark Crysis 1900 by 1200 resolution on very high settings with minimal AA and AF and got 35.7 frames per second.
All joking aside, the Crytek engine thing is actually a pretty cool idea. You know, if you figure that that this game, the Tiberium, is going to come out at some point, probably in the second half of 2008, then PCs by that point, you know, we'll probably see another bump in video cards and other good things that Crysis engine will be running even more smoothly than it is now.
And
on
something that the Crysis engine does with its the shaders, how they can add snow to levels. Like you can have a forest level, it looks completely green, and then you know with a press of a button, you can apply a shader that freezes it. It's something they could do for the Tiberium aspect of the game, because Tiberium spreads and infests landscapes.
That's right. It's like a weather.
Although that would be a little bit more complex because unlike snow, I mean, for Tiberium, like a crystal growing out of the ground, that would have to be more of a procedural generation thing, which is more than just applying a shader. But I mean, maybe they could just use that kind of technology to make the terrain look barren.
It wouldn't be just a visual thing either, because if it followed the lore from the real-time strategy games, then you know the Tiberium areas you wouldn't really be able to go into them unless you had special suits or something.
Right, right. It's very toxic stuff.
Well, from the pictures, it looks like you probably will be wearing some sort of special suit. So I imagine you would be going into Tiberium fields.
Right.
Speaking of new games, looks like Blizzard has a new MMO in development. Not really a surprise if you've been following their job posting board, because it looks like they've been looking for a new MMO tech guy since probably October, I think.
Yeah, and they keep referring to it as next-gen MMO.
Yeah, next-gen MMO. Is there really any secret about what that could possibly be?
Well, I mean, there is no certainty about what it could possibly be. I mean, we know it's an MMO. I mean, the story here was that some guy at Blizzard, don't know exactly who it was, they just got like a Blizzard moderator posting account. People were speculating, oh, is this just going to be more manpower for working on the new WoW expansion, the Lich King? This guy came on there and said, no, it's not for Lich King. It's for a new next-gen MMO, which you know Blizzard has not confirmed in any way, shape, or form beyond these job postings. So this is like the first time anybody within Blizzard has said anything about that directly.
Yeah,
so the speculation that comes out of that is just rampant, because it could very easily be any one of their three existing IPs. It could be a WoW 2, and there'd be pros and cons to why they would do that. It could be a world of StarCraft. It could be a Diablo Online, or it could be a whole new IP. Who knows?
Although I think they'd be crazy to do a new IP, and here's why. Because with all their massive success with World of Warcraft was built up by their, you know, previous big success with an RTS title. And an RTS title is much less expensive to produce than an MMO. So what I would do in their position, if I wanted to launch a new IP, is I would make a new RTS or new game in some other, you know, other genre, put that out, and if it floats, if people buy it and then, you know, get on board with the fiction, then you put out an MMO, which is a much more expensive endeavor and, you know, would be a much more spectacular flop if people don't bite.
Well, the Diablo universe has been pretty quiet lately. I mean, we know StarCraft 2 is coming, but there hasn't been any Diablo announcement so far.
It makes a lot of sense that it will be one of their existing IPs because, you know, they're obviously running at full capacity just to barely service the three IPs that they have now. You know, there hasn't been a Diablo in many years. We're just now going to be getting a new StarCraft after 10 years. And obviously the Warcraft thing is kind of, you know, they've got, you know, that's a whole enterprise now unto itself. So I personally would love to see, if it was down to me, I'd love to see a StarCraft Online because I just like that universe.
I'll second that. Yeah, and I if I were to bet on it, I would put it on StarCraft as well because to put out a Diablo Online would compete with WoW, and that's not really in their best interest. Because I mean, a lot of the stuff, a lot of the mechanics from Diablo got co-opted for World of Warcraft, and also so there would be some overlap in the gameplay. There's also the fact that you would have two competing fantasy MMOs. So why would you do that?
I've heard some logical arguments for the StarCraft thing that seem to make sense. First is, you know, if you figure this next gen MMO would be coming, what, like 2009, 2010 maybe, you know, the new StarCraft game would definitely, would lay the groundwork for that in terms of getting people, indoctrinated into the franchise. Now obviously a lot of the old school gamers like us remember the original game and love it, but you know, for younger generation, you know, it'd probably be helpful to have a new game to kind of ease them into that universe before, you know, getting thrown headfirst into an MMO. And also, you know, you think about the Korean market, which is so important to Blizzard. You know, the only thing that the Koreans love more than StarCraft is playing MMOs. So the idea of a StarCraft MMO would probably set off some kind of earthquake in Korea. Just everyone in Korea just had like a massive aneurysm.
Certainly a rash of head explosions.
Yeah, just head explosions of just pure joy. As that was announced.
You know, as much as I would like a StarCraft MMO, I really don't think whatever property they choose matters because they make such brilliant games, and WoW in particular is one that I never thought I would play. I was never into Warcraft, and yet I got totally hooked on WoW, so no matter what they make, it doesn't matter. I mean, I'll probably
The other
play
reason
it.
Why I like the idea of the StarCraft MMO, though, is that it kind of means it would have to be a different... It can't just be like Warcraft with a StarCraft skin, like running around different areas. There would have to be, you know, ships and planets and different game mechanics that would be, you know, quite a different game from Warcraft. So, you know, the idea of like a World of Diablo kind of feels like it would have a similar vibe to it. I'm sure it would be different enough, but, you know, you want something that's just completely unlike Warcraft, hopefully.
My argument against StarCraft is that there has never really been a hugely successful sci-fi-based MMO out there. And actually, if you look at the MMO market in Korea, most of those games are fantasy-based and you know, look a lot more like Diablo than they would like StarCraft.
Don't you think, though, that there's like one lore for everyone else and one lore for Blizzard now? Like, Blizzard is so huge, and Warcraft has just propelled them to such legendary status now. That things like that, like, oh, it's never been done, they can just toss that aside and say, well, screw it, we're doing it.
I think they would succeed. Invincible.
Yeah, I mean, I think that they would succeed if they did a World of StarCraft, but you know, using it as an argument that if they came up with World of Diablo, for example, that would draw customers away from Warcraft, while it could be true, I think that at the end of the day, they would still see more people playing Diablo than they would StarCraft.
That's
the other reason for them to do a StarCraft game, though, isn't it? Because they don't want to necessarily do another fantasy RPG that might just cannibalize players from Warcraft into their other game. You know, whether or not they get the $15 from the guy playing Warcraft, if he just jumps over and starts paying for StarCraft instead, that's not really a win for Blizzard. But if they can get people who maybe don't like the idea of Warcraft because it's a fantasy or whatever, they're more into sci-fi, and StarCraft can bring those people in, then they are going to grow their base.
And, you know, there have been plenty of sci-fi-based MMOs, and, like, you know, there's been City of Heroes, there's been, you know, Tabula Rasa just came out.
EVE Online.
EVE Online. There are also a lot of, over in Asia, there are a lot of, big, anime robot style games out there. I just don't think that they're going to have that kind of stumbling block. Besides which, the StarCraft universe is already hugely popular. When StarCraft II comes out later in 2008, they're going to reinvigorate it, and it kind of follows the pattern they did with Warcraft, because they put out Warcraft III in 2002, and then like about 2 years later, out comes World of Warcraft to capitalize on that.
Hey, don't get me wrong. I would love to be proven wrong on this, but it's just, I mean, City of Heroes and City of Villains are really the only exceptions. You know, those are the only games that were really successful that weren't, fantasy-based in the model of World of Warcraft.
I just think, though, that it's a unique case with Blizzard. The fact that it's coming from Blizzard just negates everything else. You know, any little stumbling blocks like that, this hasn't been done, or this might be a tricky thing to break through. That Blizzard can just kind of power through that with their reputation and no doubt the quality of the game.
It's the fiction. So many people are just hooked on the fiction, though they want to go into that world.
Well, I don't know if that was true of WoW, though. I mean,
I think so.
The majority of the players who play World of Warcraft had no idea about the fiction before they started playing it.
Right, but the fiction, the groundwork for the fiction had already been laid by the games, so they were just building on that for WoW, and then. And they've got the similar situation with StarCraft, and I think they're going to do the same kind of thing we saw in Warcraft 3, where they added a lot to the mythology and brought in new little characters. Like in Warcraft 3, they had the creeps, like the little generic little creatures in there that turned out to be great big enemy classes in WoW. So I think we're going to see a lot of that same kind of thing.
I'm definitely in the minority, as you have to be when, the WoW user base is now up to, almost 10 million players. You know, the hardcore gamers are clearly have to be in the minority because there's just not that many out there. A lot of those guys are mainstream. But for me, it was exactly the way Jeremy said. I had passed on fantasy MMO after fantasy MMO. Like EverQuest didn't appeal to me, and I can't even remember all the others. But there were so many that I just they're all kind of Tolkien ripoffs. And then Warcraft came along, and I had already, I already was somewhat invested in that world through the RTS games and knew the characters, knew the races, and knew a little bit of the history of the world. So it was easier for me to jump into that than it was with a lot of the other games.
Exactly.
Regardless of what property they choose, though, I think the only real significance of this story is that Blizzard is future-proofing itself. Because as Gary said in the past, there's going to come a time when WoW has run its course and it's no longer going to be top dog, just like we saw with EverQuest and Ultima Online, before. I mean, there's going to come a time that happens, and Blizzard wants to be there in order to replace it with its own property.
Yeah, and from a business perspective, it's a really tricky thing to have to do because you can't take the short view. They've got to be thinking, 5-6 years ahead, because that's probably what if they start. Let's assume they started developing this MMO. This next gen MMO probably 2 years ago. I mean, it's probably on a 5-6 year cycle before it's ready to be deployed. And they need to be thinking, well, where are we going to be 5 years out from World of Warcraft? And you have to be pretty smart from a business standpoint and almost pretty lucky, because I don't care how good you are at business, it's pretty difficult to know where you're, a game like MMO like World of Warcraft is going to be 5 years from now. Is it going to be even bigger? Will it have topped out? I mean, who can really say? But they need to make pretty educated guesses about all these things in terms of knowing how and when to deploy the next game in the right way so that it dovetails neatly as the last one. And there probably will be, aside from that, a World of Warcraft 2. I mean, they're not just going to hope that player base, they're not going to let 10 million players loose and say, well, maybe let's come and try something different. They're going to try and keep World of Warcraft fresh for those guys.
Right. Well, apparently it's not that easy to do because, Sony brought out EverQuest 2, didn't come anywhere near to enjoying the success of the original EverQuest. EA has yet to bring out an Ultima Online 2, even though they've had a couple of attempts and both were canceled. So
now, I think that it's going to be a long time, like a really long time, before Blizzard stops seeing profits from World of Warcraft. Simply because, there are people still playing the original EverQuest because they're so invested in their characters. there are a lot of people that are still very invested, that are equally invested in their World of Warcraft characters. And, you know, that game is you know, not nearly as old. So, like, you know, even, you know, 5, maybe even 10 years down the line, people will still be playing that. And even if it's a small, small fraction of the 9 million plus people that are playing it right now, that's still a massive profit for Blizzard.
The problem for EverQuest 2 was also that Sony had pissed off a lot of their player base in the final years of EverQuest during that transition. And also they were dealing with World of Warcraft, which had come along and kind of eaten their lunch. So they never really had a clear shot at the way that Blizzard probably had would have with transitioning to a second Warcraft game.
Yeah. Anyway.
So moving to a different game, Team Fortress 2, there were some interesting stats that were revealed this week. You guys want to talk about them? It looks like the Scout is the most popular class among players.
I would not have seen that coming.
I'm surprised. Why not?
I don't like playing as the Scout.
Just as you're no good at it.
It's a skill class. And I don't mean that as a knock on Dan, but I'm kind of
happy
with the way
skill.
It came out anyway. it really is a skill class because it's, you know, I think it appeals a lot to the kind of the hardcore Counter-Strike circle strafers that like to bunny hop around and, you know, can do like a 360 around you and kill you before you even know what the hell happened.
The Scout is the class that was
invented for those guys. They're incredibly effective when they're played by skilled players.
Yeah.
I'm really surprised that Engineer is second to Scout.
Oh, I'm not surprised at all.
I love the Engineer. I got more time in as an Engineer than any other class.
It's interesting that the most played classes are not necessarily the classes that earn the most points per hour. Because the sniper actually earns more points than any other class, and he's the fifth most played class.
The engineer is such a strange role to play because it's often very boring. You know, you basically just have to stand by your gun, and long swaths of gameplay can go by with you never really seeing any action. And yet, it's incredibly satisfying when your gun kills people.
In a game that's based around capture the flag mechanics, a very powerful stationary gun is incredibly valuable. But about the sniper, that's another like very skill based class. So only the people that are good shots that you know maybe they got higher DPI mice or whatever. But it's a huge you know skill based thing to be able to you know hit people from a long distance away like that.
The only problem with the sniper is I found that its role in the team is not very clearly defined, and what you'll often find is people. And you see this particularly on Two Fort when you've got the two sets of snipers on the rival galleries there, who aren't really interested, who aren't really kind of taking part in the game itself. They're just playing their own little mini game where they're just kind of shooting at the rival snipers across the way, and they're not part of any overall strategy or anything.
They're competing for sniping rights on you know the other side. They're keeping each other in check. By sniping at each other, but the moment one of them gets a kill shot, they'll go after everybody else.
I guess. I think on Two Fort, though, Norman points it out, makes a good point when he talks about Dust Bowl, where they are a lot more integrated into the game, but all they're really doing on a map like Two Fort is cancelling each other out.
Right.
I think that's good gameplay. Yeah.
Do you think that based on these stats, Valve is going to make any changes to like the scouts, because since they're being used like disproportionately more than say, the medic?
I doubt it. I don't think so.
I mean, you have more pawns in the chessboard than you have any other unit. And
there's a lot of other stats you might look at, like the rocket is the most powerful weapon by a long shot.
Right.
Almost twice as powerful as the next weapon, which is the minigun.
Intentional because the minigun, it's per bullet, and the rocket, you know, one shot, you get the slash damage.
Right.
But the firing rate is so low. I mean, what's more interesting is for each individual map, which team wins more often. It looks like blue wins much more frequently.
Well, on the three maps where you have symmetrical maps, Granary, Well, and Two Fort, blue wins more than half the time, and red only wins about like 40% of the time.
That's just got to be an anomaly. There can't be any real reason for that.
It could be just what teams people pick first.
It could be that some of the better players just prefer playing blue.
Yeah. We have more liberals playing
I can understand seeing it on one of the attack and defend maps, you know, that if the defending team won most of the time, that would tell you something about maybe the map is slightly biased towards defenders. But on the symmetrical maps, I don't understand how you can take anything.
I'm with you, Gary. It's very odd. It should be perfectly even.
In theory.
Yeah.
I mean, with maybe the standard margin of error of like 2 or 3 degrees either way, which doesn't really mean anything. But 10% is fairly significant, and I just don't know where it's coming from.
Yeah, in the case of Weld, red only wins 30% of the time.
That's weird.
Another interesting thing is Gravel Pit is played more than any other map by a pretty big margin. And it's a very unique map in that you have these three checkpoints. And I wouldn't be surprised if Valve sees that, and that is maybe one of their next maps that they release as a downloadable content.
Well, when we had Frank O'Connor on the Game Theory podcast earlier this week from Bungie, you know, they just released a set of map packs for Halo 3 on Xbox, and he was talking about, Bungie have got a very, very good set of statistical gathering tools, very similar, I'm sure, to what Valve have, where they watch everything that's going on, and they really use that as a foundation, you know, for how they present the next set of maps. If one particular style of play is very popular, then, you know, they're going to try and cater to that more with the next set.
I don't know how authentic that is, because there's a default map rotation, and if some servers just have the default map rotation, I think Gravel Pit is the first map that's played.
Oh, is that true?
Yeah.
That's a good point.
So it could just be the order of the map rotation.
You know, at these death maps, one kind of weird point is that if you look at Two Fort and you look at the front door of the base is another symmetrical map, you can see where most deaths take place, and most deaths take place on the left door if you're leaving the buildings, which means for some reason people always exit out the left door. So if you're looking to survive a little bit more than normal, exit out the right door.
Then go out the right door, that's right.
Hey, what's the least played class?
Least played class is the medic.
Medic.
Okay, yeah, that's not difficult to figure out, I guess.
Yeah.
Who wants to help others?
Pyro.
Although I actually enjoy playing medic, so... And
wait, did you say second only to the pyro?
Well, no, the pyro is second least.
No, that's what I'm saying. I'm surprised it's the second least, because the pyro is a really fun class. That's my second most played class after engineer. I'm proudly wearing my pyro t-shirt as we speak. Pyro is a great class.
I don't know, I was always terrible at it. I always got killed by people after I set them on fire.
Yep.
I really do think that there is something to be said for the fact that the scout is the most played class, because it comes back to what I said earlier about how it is a skill class. It's not a class that's very noob friendly at all. I don't think if you actually want to get kills and be successful as a scout, you have to have a certain level of skills. And so I wonder if it says something about the overall skill level of the kind of people that are attracted to Team Fortress 2, if it has brought a lot of, you know, kind of hardcore Counter-Strike players over or what. But you're not seeing a lot of noobs playing Scout. Those guys that play Scout, they're playing it because they're good at it.
Well, it's a good thing that we have Team Fortress 2 to play right now, because unfortunately Ubisoft has delayed all of its first-person shooters for some reason. Not by too much, only by a couple months, but that means that Far Cry 2, Haze, and Brothers in Arms, Hell's Highway have been delayed into a little bit later into the spring now. And I was wondering if it might have something to do with another article I read this morning in the paper that the French government is going to be giving tax breaks to game makers who include some sort of cultural content in their games. And so I'm wondering if maybe, like, you know, one of these shooters, we'll see more shootouts in the Louvre or something like that.
What classifies as cultural content?
Well, that's a good question. I have no idea. Like, you know,
the hero wears a beret and
jeez.
instead of health pickups, you drink wine. And I don't know. What else?
It's very ambiguous, isn't it? I don't know exactly what they classify as cultural content.
You could drive a Fiat.
It's odd that they're delaying a genre of games.
Yeah, and it could be that just, you know, when they set out their release dates before, they were just overambitious, and, you know, they figure, or, you know, it could be a financial thing. Maybe they moved it from one financial quarter to another. That could be. Maybe they just want to boost up their earnings in that quarter.
Maybe they realized EA accidentally already released Far Cry 2.
I'm really looking forward to Far Cry 2, Jeremy. I have to say, I mean, after we did our cover story, I think it'll be significantly different from Crisis.
Excellent.
I'm looking forward to the role playing elements of it, because you know you're not playing as one guy. There's several different avatars that you can play as, and there's a bunch of different people that you can ally with, and it actually changes the story. So I'm really looking forward to that element.
I didn't know about that stuff. That does sound good.
Well, you know, you should pick up a copy of PC Gamer.
It takes place in Africa.
Yeah, it's all in Africa.
And, you know, the French had colonies in Africa, so who knows?
Oh.
Probably run into the French speakers.
Maybe.
Or people with French accents.
Bien sûr.
Maybe on the hard difficulty level, they'll only speak French, thereby...
Oh, that would be brilliant. Now, that's some cultural content.
Yeah.
Final news story. Looks like... So, I don't know a lot about this. I think Logan knows more about this. Microsoft apparently had some sort of offer where you could get Vista for free.
Yeah.
And now they've yanked it. What happened?
Well, they were offering a handful of their software for free. Good stuff. Microsoft Vista Ultimate and Office 2007. But what you had to do is install this little widget on your PC that monitored your usage. And that's quote-unquote, I don't know what they were looking at, but if you kept it on your computer for 3 months, they would give you a key for Vista or, you know, Office. But as soon as it hit the interwebs, boom. I think their allotment was almost instantly taken up. So that's why I blogged about it a couple days ago, but almost instantly, they didn't even say we're not giving away Vista or Office anymore. They just took the whole paragraph about what you get out of the offer. So they're just saying, hey, yeah, you want us to look over your shoulder for 3 months? Download this little applet.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
So now it's the same thing. You just have no incentive for doing it.
Well, they're still giving away like Microsoft Trip Planner, you know, because nobody's heard of Google Maps. I don't know. they still have a handful of titles that they'll give you, but the good stuff is gone. Right. Yeah. So I don't know who's doing this, but there was another catch in that you had to use it for 3 months. You had to be observed for 3 months before they gave up the key for you.
Right.
So I don't know if it was 3 months of telling you, you know, hey, wait, you've got a cracked copy.
You know, it's probably, you know, they just want to get usage data. They want to know how to improve.
Yeah, sure.
So, you know, I don't think they have anything nefarious in mind with that. They just want feedback.
No.
Which they can't really get from, you know, people under controlled conditions. They want to know what you're doing in the wild. But at the same time, it's kind of creepy. But, you know, if you're not doing anything...
Although people who did sign up for the program did say that, you know, that there were people following them on the bus and kind of things like that. But that hasn't been confirmed.
I just want to see the little paperclip pop up and say, so, I see you're looking at porn. So,
can I help you?
Yeah.
You look like you use a hand.
Uh-huh. Go stand in the corner with Norm right now.
All right, let's take a couple of questions.
Hey, PC Gamer Podcast, this is Cliff out in Anaheim, California. You guys are doing a fantastic job. Somewhat of a rant today. What is the deal with the game manuals? All the game manuals out there today seem to be really, really skimpy on details. I don't know if you guys have seen the Call of Duty 4 manual. It was like no more than 8 or 9 pages. No information about multiplayer for the most part. You'd have no idea what game mode you're available to play. And Crysis had another crappy game manual as well. Anyway, if you guys can comment on that a little bit and why these companies are skimping on the game manuals but yet charging us, you know, our standard rate of $50, I'd love to hear what you guys have to say about it. Take care.
For me, I never really understood the insistence on a big fat manual, because for me, if you need a manual to play a game, it's a badly designed game, because the game should be easy enough to play, to understand. It should teach you how to do it in the tutorials, that you shouldn't need a manual.
Well, I can't remember the last time I even looked at a manual.
Yeah, I don't open them.
I strongly believe that a well-designed, internal part of a well-designed game these days is a good tutorial and learning mode that teaches you how to play the game without having to read a book.
Yeah.
I agree mostly. However, if you're playing an in-depth flight sim or
MMORPG
or something like that, then they should have, you know, some sort of beefy manual with them.
Those kind of games do have big beefy manuals that talk about all that stuff. But for a shooter or for an RPG or something like that, they all walk you through it in the first level.
The only part of it that I miss is like the good old days when the documentation was more than just a manual. Like it was all part of the experience, you know, like even going back to the old Infocom games.
Right.
When,
exactly.
You know, there was like storybooks and maps and things that really kind of made you feel like, you know, the experience wasn't just the disc, you know, there was all kinds of stuff to kind of help immerse you in the world, but nobody does that anymore. So,
well, you know who the last people to do that was? You know, who the last people that did something cool were Rockstar for GTA.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that was great.
The whole San Andreas travel pamphlet they had in there, that was pretty awesome.
That was a fantastic box.
You know, it's funny you mentioned MMO, though, Chuck, because that's a genre I would say where manuals don't lend themselves too well, except for maybe the week the game's released, because as soon as they start updating the game, the manual becomes irrelevant.
That's very true.
Well, but at the same time, a lot of people, they automatically run out and they buy the strategy guides for the MMOs. And why? Because it has a list of all the spells and all the information that should be in the manual in the first place.
Maybe the game companies are secretly in league with the strategy guide publishers. You know, they get a kickback.
No.
They don't provide a proper manual, so you got to buy the extra book, and then they kick back half of that to the game publisher. Oh, that's what I would do.
There it is.
Cue the dramatic prairie dog.
It gets pushed on you at the game store as well. You go and buy a game, and the first thing they ask you is if you want the book that goes with it.
That's right.
Yeah, absolutely.
Say is hell no.
And when those strategy guides have the information in there that should have been in the manual in the first place, that's when I get upset. It's less about strategy. It's more about stuff you need to know just to play the game.
GameFAQs.com, right. Friends.
Hello, PC Gamer Podcast. My name is Edon Grossman from Fairfax, Virginia, and I just have a quick question about Grand Theft Auto 4. First, how long do you think it'll take for Grand Theft Auto 4 to reach the PCs? Two, when it does hit the PCs, do you think it'll come with the 360's exclusive downloadable content? And three, do you think it'll be games for Windows and with Windows Live? And should I cancel my pre-order for the 360 version? That was it. Keep up the great work. Bye.
I think if you want to play it any time in the next, you know, year, I wouldn't cancel that order. but there's been no announcement as to when it's coming out on PC.
Typically, there's about a year.
6 months to a year.
Yeah.
I mean, like with Assassin's Creed, it's coming out in March, if all goes according to plan.
But no, I meant specifically for the GTA games. It's been about a year between the console release and the PC release.
Right. When it does, based on the fact that BioShock had a Games for Windows logo on it, it will probably have that packaging and, you know, probably be Games for Windows certified. I doubt it will have Live for Windows. Well, you know, that's actually a good question. No, actually, because it's coming out for both 360 and PS3, I doubt it will be Live for Windows. I doubt they'll do, like, cross-platform compatibility. So I bet they'll do their own multiplayer service.
Is there multiplayer in the game?
I believe so.
Really? That's news to me.
I could be wrong on that. I deliberately don't... Read up on games I want to play that aren't coming out for the PC for a while because I don't want to play them.
Don't listen to Dan for your console news.
Well, yeah, for Mass Effect, I've been avoiding information about that because, you know, like all BioWare games, it's almost certainly going to eventually make it out on the PC, and I don't want to, you know, be wishing I could play it until it does. So,
hi guys. This is Jordan from East Lansing. You know, the game Aquaria was just released on PC. It's an independent game made by a couple of people, and, you know, it's a really great game. I was wondering if any of you had played it. It's a blend of Super Metroid, it's underwater, and it's really, really cool. The demo alone took me 2 hours to beat, and it's completely worth the time. Let me know what you think. Thanks. Bye.
Well, I had no idea that's what that question was, but I actually saw his comment in the... PC Gamer Podcast site comments, and I downloaded it, and I have played that game. And
oh, you have? How'd you like it?
It's actually kind of neat. I mean, I don't play too many independent games, so it's a step to take, you know, to play a very low-budget game. But once you get over that threshold, and you realize, you know, that probably it was just designed by two or three people, it's actually a lot of fun. I mean, it's kind of has a lot in common with the old Sega game Echo the Dolphin. So you're sort of swimming around a world that's two-dimensional, but you go through all these caverns. And you sing different notes, and you make things happen. I wouldn't be surprised if the developers are actually WoW fans, because there are recipes, and you collect ingredients, and then you can combine them to make things, and you learn new skills, and there's a lot of magic involved. It's worth checking out. Certainly, it's for a two-hour free demo. I'd Google it.
I thought he said it was like Metroid.
Yeah, I don't get that comparison. It is.
Yeah, there's not a lot of similarity between Echo the Dolphin and Metroid, but...
Or okay. World of Warcraft and Metroid.
Well, it's typical role-playing, you know, magic and recipes, but it did sort of hearken to some WoW mechanics.
Hey, everyone over at PC Gamer. This is Cody from Alberta. First time, long time. I just wanted to ask you guys a question about celebrity. You got your faces in the magazine, and you're doing the podcast. You're out and about around your local areas. Just curious if you guys ever get recognized or harassed out on the streets. I know being up in Canada, the chances of me bumping into you at a showdown or something like that are pretty much out the window. So if I ever see Gary in a Burger King or something like that, I'm bugging him for an autograph. I don't care how grumpy he is. And just on a quick side note, Assassin's Creed. I'm eagerly, eagerly awaiting this thing. I don't want to break down and buy it for my 360. So do you guys know for sure when it's hitting the PC yet? And have any of you tried it? Anyway, thanks a lot. I'll be listening.
Hey, and Assassin's Creed in March is the date they've given. Has anybody been recognized?
I've been recognized a couple of times, but usually, like, you know, I'll go to an EB and, you know, I'll stand there for like 4 or 5 hours like I normally do waiting for someone to recognize me, and nobody ever does. But the best story that I have about that is one time Greg Viederman and I were in Las Vegas. We were there for the Game Developer Awards. And we weren't in the show. We were just watching it. And we were leaving right after the awards finished. We had to leave and go to the airport to catch our plane back to San Francisco. And so we're in the taxi line. And one of the guys who worked there actually recognized us, came over and said, "Hello, Mr. Viederman. Hello, Mr. Osborne. I can get you a taxi right away." And he didn't recognize us from the awards, because I thought maybe they were just being nice to us because they thought that we were with the developer group. No, he was a lifelong reader of the magazine. He recognized us and, you know, got us a cab right away and everything, and we chatted. He was a really nice guy. And I think that was the one time where I really felt like, you know, I was almost a celebrity based on working for the magazine.
And you narrowly escaped with your lives.
and he's been stalking me ever since.
Ever since that guy let Chuck out of his basement, he's, you know, it's been, he's never been the same since.
I've been recognized a couple of times, but they just come up and they say sort of gingerly, "Logan?" Ah! You never know from what direction it's coming or what they're going to do.
I've never been recognized yet, but... My favorite thing about that was I was down at my corner laundromat one time, and I was sitting in there waiting for my laundry, and a guy sat down next to me and opened up a PC Gamer, and I was just sitting there and you know, kind of glancing over, seeing what he was reading, and you know, he got to a page with my picture on it, and I'm sitting there right next to him, and he has no idea.
If you said anything, he would have thought it was a dream.
Yeah, I decided against it.
He would have tossed his beer away.
You say, "Hey, nice magazine." Wink at him, you know. No.
Gary?
I've been recognized a few times, mostly at like game shows and conventions and things like that, you know, where, you know, there's a lot of, you know, the kind of people that are more likely to recognize you are in close proximity. And they always have something nice to say. I don't have any amusing being recognized stories, though.
But you're also a famous comic book writer too, so you have more than just PC.
Yeah, I've been recognized for things other than the magazine, but it's mostly you know, gaming stuff. I am ashamed to admit that I've done the same thing as Chuck. I have hung around in EB longer than necessary.
Except I was kidding, but.
And then you. And then you have the guy who runs out after you. Go, are you Gary Witter? And you go, well, yes, I am. And he's like, you left your credit card in the store. It's a lot.
Well, if only if only Team Fortress 2 servers were the real world, then you'd think we were all
We get recognized a ton, don't we, on Team Fortress? We're internet famous on Team Fortress.
Yeah,
everyone knows us there.
I love those games.
Yeah.
So Dan, what have you been playing this week?
I've still been playing in my, you know, my what little free time I've had lately. It's been kind of shameful how little free gaming time I've had, but I've been playing a bunch of Supreme Commander Forge Alliance. I'm finally getting the hang of the economy, and but still getting my ass kicked the majority of the time. So I think that like some of the new units they've added, like the tier 2 fighter bombers, might be a little bit overpowered. They should. So it would be nice if they fix that in the next patch. But
are you playing multiplayer or single player?
Oh, yeah, multiplayer. It's really the only way to go, because the AI, you know, it's good for the first couple rounds, but then you just start thumping it pretty badly. And that's even if you use the cheat, like the AIs that blatantly cheat. They throw a lot of little units at you, but it takes a really long time to get up to tier 2 and tier 3 units, and it's just not that challenging after a while. But you go online, and people are really, really good. So it's a challenge, especially when you get into the 8-player games. And, you know, the 4v4, that's a lot of fun. I'm kind of addicted to that.
Logan, what have you been playing?
Well, ever since the Bioshock patch came out with the new plasmids, I dove right back into that, and I've been playing it on 3 screens with the new Matrox external box triple head to go. Crazy, because the patch also includes support for this Matrox box that lets you play, that lets you create a desktop that spans 3 monitors, and it is a sight to behold. You'll get a review in the March issue.
And question. That's not a hardware solution, right?
Yeah, it is.
Oh, it is. Oh, yeah. It is hardware. Okay.
Yeah, but it's not. It's external. You basically just plug it. Your DVI cable from the PC to the box, and then plug 3. LCDs into the box.
Logan, when you're using that, is the image as crisp as it would be if you went straight to your monitor?
Absolutely it is. It is the proportion can get a little skewed a little bit. You know, depending on the quality of your monitors, depending on how they're positioned, and whether or not the game supports it natively. But it looks, Bioshock, which does support it, looks fantastic. And I'm running it at, 3840 by 1024.
Does your system know that it has 3 monitors? In other words, can you maximize windows in each of the monitors?
No, your system thinks it's just one giant desktop.
Monitor.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. All right.
Okay, do all 3 monitors have to be the same size?
They do not have to be, they should be. All the details in the March 08 issue.
When you're playing Bioshock, is it like your peripheral vision in the side 2 monitors?
Yep. So imagine it with a flight simulator, being able to look left and right out the windows.
Oh,
oh yeah.
Or driving.
Oh,
games.
Yeah.
Watching Logan play it, I just, you know, you can look side to side, but you can't look up. You know, it's kind of weird.
It's
like I want 6 monitors. I need another 3 up top.
Or 9.
Yeah. Why stop there?
So, Norm, what have you been playing?
I've been playing Barbie Island Princess.
Well, great, Norm. Thank you very much. Jeremy, what have you been playing this week?
Scotty's been playing Barbie Island.
But besides Aquaria, I've just been playing some Team Fortress 2, which is great because I hadn't played it for about a week or so. So I'm happy to be back in there kicking some ass.
What are you playing as?
As a soldier, I mean, the number of hours I have spent playing a soldier is really remarkably embarrassing. I think I've closed in on 52 last night.
Wow.
Just a soldier. yeah. That's my life.
Gary, what about you?
Well, I've been playing the trying to get Crysis to install game, which is not really a whole lot of fun.
It's not Crysis's fault, though.
It's not. No, I should be... I've got this really annoying Plex Store DVD drive, which someone gave me for free when I was building my machine. without telling me that apparently all games, or at least a lot of games, hate Plex Door drives.
I think it's secure ROM. It's like, you know, yeah, I should warn you, this drive comes with a terrible curse.
But yes. And it's so, really like, BioShock wouldn't install on it. I had to use another drive to install that. And then since then, actually, a lot of the games that I've been playing, I've been downloading from Steam. So this is only, I think, the second game in a few months I've actually tried to install via a disc, and this one won't work either. So I'm wondering if this is, I just need a new drive. So I'm going to go pick up a new drive. Again, I'm going to go to CompUSA and try to get a bargain.
They were great drives, but mysteriously more and more games just will not play on them. And
yeah, so
I can't help but be suspicious about that.
I'm going to go down to CompUSA and pick at their carrion flesh and find a cheap DVD flesh. Drive.
And hey, Celebrity Hunters, that's a good place to find Gary Whitta.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, maybe if I hang around there a bit too long as well, people will eventually recognize me.
Either that or you'll be sold at a discount.
That's Mr. right. Well, I just wait for someone turn to out put your a price bucket, sticker please. On me.
Well, I finally got around to installing Call of Duty 4 last night, and I didn't get very far into it. I only played the first level and then the, you know, being the president in the next intro part. I mean, it's a good experience. I liked it. I was a little disappointed, though, that when you're in the part where, you know, the ship is sinking, just how linear that part is. I mean, it's like you're just racing down a hallway and that's it.
That's the whole game. You're just racing down a hallway for the whole game.
That's what I'm worried about.
You're talking about...
Sometimes the hallway goes, you know, vertically for a little while, and sometimes it's a, you know, the hallway widens out a little bit. You can go right around the tank, or you can go left around the tank. But it's a hallway.
Are you talking about the whole game, or just when the ship starts to sink and you're running out the ship?
Are you guys sure you didn't get stuck? You know,
no. Chuck's talking about the first level. I'm talking about the whole game.
Yeah, I'm talking about just the first level. I haven't played past the first level, so you know that's all I can comment on. But I just thought it seemed really tightly linear. Like when you're trying to escape, that they didn't offer you more leeway to, you know, like you know, get lost, for example. You know, to explore a little bit. It's just there's a very tight hallway, and you just run after those guys, and that's it. There was more to it in Jedi Knight 2 when that ship was going down.
Yeah, it's very pretty. Stuff's going on all around you as you're running down the corridor. It's a roller coaster ride, quite literally. You're on a rail.
Yeah, it's an experience to be played. I mean, I guess it is kind of like one of the closest things that I've seen to an interactive movie.
Yeah.
But as a game, you know, compared to you know, Crysis, where you have choices, then you can go at things from different ways.
In the end,
yes, Crysis does become linear. But having multiple types of gameplay in one game, I don't count that against a game.
All right. Well, I guess that wraps up this week's podcast. Next week, we will be interviewing Ed Fries, who is the guy behind Fingerprints. That's a company that...
Fingerprints!
That is a company that allows you to create your own World of Warcraft figurine based on your avatar. You will want to listen, because we are going to be giving away a figurine to one lucky podcast listener. Can you believe that?
Damn,
and
bring
no,
it.
It's not you. It's not you.
Oh!
Someone out there.
Bring it.
So on behalf of PC Gamer, this is Chuck Osborne. On behalf of Logan Decker, Dan Stapleton, Jeremy Williams, Gary...
Something or other.
Norm.
What was your name again?
Everybody. Thank you very much for listening, and we are out.
Give us a call at our voicemail at 877-404-1337, extension 724. Is that right?
And subscribe at pcgamer.com/subscribe. Alright, you got your work cut out for you there, Jeremy.
Yep.
How do I sound now? Is Logan a fool? Did he have the microphone backwards?
See, yeah, it's, so that's it's it. Coming up now.
Yeah, yeah, so it's Skype was actually like automatically softening it based on
No, the microphone was twisted around backwards.
No, but right now, as you talked just then, it got louder and louder.
Right, because I twisted it back around.
Okay.
So, here you go.
Let him think he did it. It's easier that way.
All right, how about now?
There you are.
There
yeah,
you
it
are.
Works now.
Seriously,
yep.
Okay.
Yes.
Scott, and a f***ing stupid f***ing ass. Every f***ing time I load this f***ing program up, I have to f*** around for 10 f***ing minutes to get the f***ing microphone to work.
You know?
Yeah, right, and it's stupid f***ed.
So Jeremy, can you keep that for the...
Yeah, okay.
There's your f***ing outtake.
Thank you.
Beep, 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 beep.
It can't be as good as the video that's going around today, the guy that stuck his head up a sheep's ass and then gets dragged around by the sheep.
Gary, you go to the wrong forums, man.
No, I go to the right forums.
No, those are the wrong forums.
How does it affect the development of Star Trek, like, or the next Star Trek MMO game?
The next one?
Or the Star Trek MMO game?
You mean Star Trek Online.
Yeah, Star Trek Online.
As far as I know, it'll still take place in outer space.
Yeah, this
Renegade.
Is not like Renegade at all. It's gonna be free, I think, and it's gonna be based on micro.
Whoa! Where are you getting that?
I thought I read that somewhere.
You heard
it
here first.
Would it be free?
No, that's
you're thinking.
No,
I think you're thinking
that's
Arena.
Not true.
Okay, that's not true. Cut that out, Jeremy.
Yeah,
cut that out.
Please cut that out.
Yeah, this is not a free game. Norm, no talking out of your ass. That was Logan again.
Sorry, I had to pee so bad I felt like a water
balloon. Logan, there's a mute button on Skype.
Okay, now I know that.
Maybe,
you know, a nice
the
touch in the world
are secretly
of...
in league with the
a nice touch
with
in the
world.
One at a time.
Sorry.
And does your system...
I want to ask a question.